Badger fans, and welcome to another edition of Bucky's Fifth Podcast. As always, Tyler Hunt and Matt Bells here covering everything Wisconsin athletics. Hope you guys had a good holiday weekend. On today's show, we've got a lot to get to recap what was a very busy holiday weekend for Wisconsin athletics. We'll start with some news at the front of the show. We've got some basketball news, some football news, some volleyball news, and then we'll get into recapping the finale from the Maui Invitational, which saw the Badgers become Maui champs, which was a really fun couple days for the Wisconsin basketball team. And then after that, we'll get into the recap of what was a tough and disappointing trip for Wisconsin football up to Minneapolis. Of course, falling losers of the Axe, which is never fun. It's a tough one when you have to swallow that. It also costs, you know, the West Division title, a trip to the Big Ten Championship. The list goes on and on. A really tough football game for them to lose. And I know there's a lot of the fan base not super excited with that result. And clearly on the Twitter sphere, it's been made known. But we'll get into all things Wisconsin-Minnesota as we recap what's been a up-and-down regular season of Wisconsin football. Matt, how are you today?
Doing good. Yeah, no, I think the next couple weeks are going to be pretty crazy. We've seen already some transfer portal news, whether it comes from the Badgers or elsewhere. There's coaches kind of moving all over the place. So I think this is, like, we look at it, hey, there's not like a game to preview for the football team this week, but across college football, there is a ton of news going on and more swirling as we speak. So it's going to be fun, and I know we're going to be kind of along for the ride. How you doing, man?
I'm good. Yeah, it's really going to be, you talk about a crazy just college football season already. I think this off season will be just as crazy in terms of the coaching carousel. A ton of open jobs. You're going to have transfer portal left and right. You're going to have recruits flipping left and right. So just because there won't exactly be, you know, every team playing across the country like we're used to over the last 12, 13 weeks, there's still be plenty of news flying. And yesterday was certainly a big news day with all sorts of firings, hirings, coaching changes, all like that. So it's going to be a busy few weeks once you get to National Signing Day as well. So the news of the episodes will not slow down anytime soon. And speaking of news, why don't we go ahead and get started with some of that? We'll start with the football news. We've got a couple brief little things to talk about. Isaiah Green May, outside linebacker for Wisconsin, has announced that he's going to enter the transfer portal, so his final season will be spent elsewhere. Of course, a guy that always looked like a guy with high upside for Wisconsin, never quite really panned out. You thought maybe this was the year early and on in the season. I know there was a lot of talk about him progressing. Didn't see as much of him as you maybe would have thought. And, of course, you know, with the other outside linebackers playing really well, it was hard to crack the field. So Isaiah Green May will transfer and finish his season elsewhere. What do you make of that news announcement?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense when you consider kind of his career arc and everything that's gone on. He's a really bright kid, and he's done a lot at the University of Wisconsin, you know, off of the field. He's really involved in a lot of things. He's just like a guy that you'd want on your team. And I think whoever gets him is getting a player with, like you mentioned, a guy that if he can stay healthy, he can help you out. But over the course of his career, we saw he injured his finger back in 2019 when it looked like he was going to have a huge role. He, all through fall camp, he was a starter, went down with injury. Noah Brooks kind of took over for him the rest of the way. And I was a little surprised that he didn't take advantage of the extra year at Wisconsin, but I think that's a testament to some of the younger players that are probably going to have a shot next year once Noah Brooks moves on. And that's probably in the best interest of the Badgers, probably the best interest of Green May, but he's a guy that you root for. This isn't like somebody who went out on bad terms. He's a really nice kid who I think everybody should be rooting for. And I think hopefully he can take advantage wherever he ends up where he's going to grad school.
Absolutely. I mean, he's a guy that you always wanted to see have success at Wisconsin. I know it didn't quite work out for what he was looking to do, but hopefully he can go to somewhere else. I'm sure another school, you know, around where he's from. You could see it makes sense, maybe a little bit smaller school, but the guy, it certainly has potential. I know, like, I don't think it was ever a case of the talent not being there, maybe just not up to, you know, that high Power 5 school type level, and the fact that he went against a lot of good outside linebackers at Wisconsin. I do think he's a player that could go somewhere else and hopefully find success in the end of his career and then make an impact, because he's got a lot of the raw tools. And if he can translate that to being on the field, I think he could be a really productive player somewhere else. So interested to see where he's going, and wish him the best of luck as he moves forward here.
Absolutely.
All right. The next piece of news, Jalen Berger has announced that he will be committing to Michigan State. Of course, entered the transfer portal formerly with the Wisconsin Badgers. Certainly, it's always tough to see a player go, but an in-state or in-conference player will be interesting for the Badgers. I know Michigan State is on upcoming schedule, so that should be a fun matchup. But overall, made a lot of sense. It seemed like that was going to be – there's been kind of hints, and I know he had been – if you follow him on Twitter, kind of mentioning how much he enjoyed his time when he went and saw Michigan State and the staff change over from Wisconsin over to there. It makes a ton of sense. So really not all that surprising, but it is interesting to see a final decision from him. So what did you make of that?
Yeah, best of luck to him. Obviously, it didn't work out with Wisconsin after he was dismissed due to some off-the-field stuff. Hopefully, with you know, his mentor, Saeed Khalif, who was the guy he followed from Jersey to Wisconsin, hopefully Khalif can get him on the right track, because you want to wish a player well and hope for him to be able to turn things around, but it's going to come down to him changing his habits and everything. But overall, I think if you look at this, Wisconsin took a player from Michigan State in the secondary in Kaylon Gervin. You see them now taking former Wisconsin running back. Overall, I think if that's a trade, do you take that? Because you've got a guy who's kind of a cancer in your locker room out, and you bring in a player who's also a four-star prospect when he was coming out of high school with a couple years of eligibility at a position of need going forward. I think you do. I think you take that if you're looking at two players who have high upside, but that you just don't necessarily know if they're going to be able to pan out in your scheme. I think Wisconsin has to feel good about getting Gervin, but you also look at the success that Michigan State had with Kenneth Walker coming over as a transfer, and you got to think maybe Berger can have a decent career if he can figure things out. I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan State keeps going for other running backs, though, just based off of the fact that Berger could also play in the slot or somewhere else as well.
Yeah, you certainly wish him the best of luck. I think it'd be you're going to see Wisconsin, of course, meet up with Michigan State next year on October 8th. So you don't want him to have too much success in that game. But overall, you do hope that he goes to Michigan State and puts together a solid career. And like you said, I think that the transfer portal now, when you see guys have success, it certainly makes sense that you want to try and hop in and hopefully have that same jump. And Michigan State's been a school that's really hit the transfer portal hard. So the connections are there. It makes sense for him as a player. It makes sense for them as a coaching staff when you've got a guy like Kenneth Walker. So I think overall it's a good move for him, and you have to hope and hope that he keeps his career on the right track and can get things figured out, because obviously it didn't work out at Wisconsin, but he's a very talented player. We've seen that in the limited time that he had there, and I think the talent is certainly still in there. Just needs the right setting to bring that back out. All right, next piece of news, we'll go ahead and talk. Before we get into the Johnny Davis news, why don't we go ahead and talk about the Wisconsin basketball new uniforms. They dropped those today, the player uniforms, which I think are pretty slick. I know there's been some mixed reviews online, but I thought they were a home run. So real quickly, before we talk about Jonathan Davis, what did you make of those?
I loved them. I thought we've seen some questionable short choices in the past. With Wisconsin retro uniforms, these that logo on the side, it's very similar to the home field sweatshirt logo that they have. I loved it. I think you look at the scheme. I love that it's from the players. It gets them excited about the uniforms. Overall, I thought it was great, and I'm excited to see them rock them on Saturday when we've got a stripe out. You see the stripes in there as well to kind of pull that all together against a rival team in Marquette. I think you can't, in my eyes, it's nothing but positivity.
Yeah, I think those are really sharp. I do like the player uniforms, that they had some say in that, which is always cool to see. I think that's, you talk about Wisconsin, they're not always going to have a new uniform combo every time or these new flashy uniforms every season, but to get some of these, onesie-twosie type uniform choices out there and available to these guys, it is really cool. I know maybe to the fans it doesn't make a huge difference, but when you can get a new set of uniforms as a college player, I'm sure it's a ton of excitement. I mean, that's a huge recruiting pitch, especially on the football side. And you look at schools that roll out these new uniforms, all the new gear, taking pictures in it. Maybe, like I said, to the average fan, maybe it doesn't make a difference. But for these players, it's certainly a lot of fun. And I'm excited to see them wear them in that upcoming contest. So overall, I think it's a slam dunk, and I think the guys will come out and hopefully continue to play well in those uniforms. I know the ones they were wearing in Maui seem to have some good luck to them, so hopefully these new ones don't bring any bad juju.
Absolutely.
All right. Next piece of news, why don't we talk about Jonathan Davis, because, of course, his big performance in the Maui Invitational not only led him to being the MVP of the tournament, but also led him to be the Big Ten Player of the Week. So really a good week, because also Wisconsin basketball entered the rankings, bracketology. Wisconsin is now in there. So overall, a good week for Greg Gard's crew. But to start with Jonathan Davis, what did you make of that? And are you? I mean, really, it's not a big surprise because he played so well in each of those three games. But how big is that for him in the trajectory of his career?
I think it's huge. I mean, you look at what he was able to do, average nearly 24 points and 7 rebounds in the Maui Invitational, especially coming off of an injury where you didn't necessarily know if he was going to be crisp, how fresh he was going to be after missing that Providence game. And he absolutely looked like a first-round draft pick. Like, he looked the part right away for the Badgers. His shot was on, and he was aggressive on both ends. He's a phenomenal defender when he wants to be. He has the mid-range game. He can get to the bucket. And it was awesome to see him take the team and show, hey, I'm going to be the player that they need, because Wisconsin needs a player to break out of the mold of, hey, it's just a developmental program. And it probably always will be, but you still need to have players that can show, hey, we can get players ready for the next level. Greg Gard needs that. So they need Jonathan Davis to go out and show out. And I think this was an award that's showing and putting him on the national stage. When you have Jay Billis, take Jay Billis for whatever he is, and however you feel about him as an announcer, but to have him speaking so highly of Johnny Davis is definitely something that's positive for his draft status and the program in general, because he is the face of this team, and having him go out and drop 24 and 7 almost on a per game basis is something that you haven't seen in a while, and it's eye-opening, especially from the guard position. They just haven't had that electric guard. You can think back to Sam Decker and Frank Kaminsky, but those were both forwards and big men. Decker more of a wing, but Johnny Davis is a bona fide guard who could be in a first-round draft pick if he continues to play at this high of a level.
Yeah, absolutely. The way he's playing has been really impressive to watch, and it's really given this team a spark. I mean, you talk about, he was the lead performer of the Maui Invitational, where he did a lot of things, not only scoring the ball, but moving the basketball as well. He just played a really great and clean couple days, and I think you're seeing the progression from where he was at last year as a, I don't want to say a secondary option. He was probably one of the better players on the floor most times for Wisconsin, but now being the guy for this offense has really allowed them to take a step forward. And they're really, I mean, broaden out to the entire team, but I think it works well into the rankings and them kind of being the Maui champs. They're really a fun team to watch, and it starts with the spark plug like Jonathan Davis. So I think this group and him specifically have played really well, and it's been a great start to the season. Not necessarily a start that any of us expected, but I think it's huge for their confidence moving forward to get started hot this early, and that starts with a player of his caliber and just the way he's performed and put the, I don't want to say put the team on his back, because the team overall played really well, but he was kind of the starter that got things going in so many different ways.
For sure.
All right, our next piece of news before, we're going to get into more basketball talk, of course, with the Maui Invitational. We'll talk the team overall. But before we do that, we've got to touch on some volleyball. I know volleyball hasn't been a big topic of discussion on the show of late, but they do deserve a ton of recognition for winning the outright Big Ten Championship. a ton of fun to watch. I think when you talk about this volleyball team, this might be the best group. I know they haven't played. I mean, they've had a few more losses this year, but they just – something about this team seems a little bit different from, you know, the past couple of years where they've gotten to those, you know, Final Fours and you know, national runner-up games that way. So what do you make of this? How big – I mean, of course, a huge accomplishment. They've been here before, but this one just feels really good when you talk about, you know, winning a absolutely loaded Big Ten conference.
Yeah, it's incredibly impressive. You look at the skill that they have all over the court, and it's there's rare air in Wisconsin sports just to see how dominant they've been here. You know, I don't think anybody's going to touch just how dominant the women's hockey program is with the Badgers, but at this point, the volleyball program is probably the second best program when you look at just sheer ability to pump out talent year in and year out. Kelly Sheffield has that group hum, and you look at the field that they're now in for the tournament, and you've got Baylor in their bracket. You've got Stanford, a team that they lost to a few years, but Baylor, the team that they beat earlier this year, is as the five seed that you would maybe see towards the end if you get to that Elite Eight. You've got Minnesota, a team you've played a ton against this year, and had some good battles with. So I think Wisconsin's in a really good place here. They got Colgate on the third, and then they play either Texas Tech or Florida Gulf Coast. But I just, you look at this, they have studs, and Dana Recchi leading this team, and they've got other options to turn to, and it's just a fun watch whenever you get the opportunity to watch this group, and you have a hard time not rooting for them just based off of everything that they do on the court, off the court, and the fun that they have when they're playing. Like, this is a very fun group that's easy to root for.
Yeah, most definitely. You hope that they can continue this impressive run that they've got. I know when some of these players came back, you know, Dana Recchi, the aspiration was, of course, to get over that hump and win a national championship. They've got all the talent to do it, and it looks like they're going to be in a position at least to start, and the way they're playing, to make that run, and hopefully they do, because you couldn't, you know, like you said, you can't root for a more deserving group. The work they've put in, the amount of games they've won, it's just been really impressive stretch here, and you'd love to see them finish off what will be a you know, final game for a lot of these, you know, a lot of this group with a national championship. And so I'm excited to see what this volleyball team can do on their run. And as we get, of course, finished up with football, and we'll have a little bit of break here, but we'll maybe try and work in more volleyball content and, of course, follow that more closely than what we have had in the past. All right, we'll go ahead and switch gears back to basketball now. We're kind of hopping around, but that's okay. Maui Invitational, we talked about the first two games. Of course, to come out in that third game against St. Mary's, once again, another impressive win. I mean, it's a game that they fell behind, battled back, clawed back. So I think you're seeing this team, I think this was just an overall three great days of basketball for them to come back in a game, to hold a lead in a game, and then, you know, pressure against the wall, didn't quite have the same things working from those first two games, and they found a way to win. So I'm not going to sit here and say all three of the teams that they played were, you know, amazing teams. They knocked off a ton of huge teams, but that Houston win was certainly impressive, and that's going to be a tournament team. Maybe the other two, you know, fringe bubble teams that way, at least to start. But overall, three wins is a win for this team, and it really was an impressive stretch. So what did you make from that finale against St. Mary's?
I was incredibly impressed. You look at what this team did to win the bracket, and they really took care of business against all of the teams that they played, obviously, to get there. But also, when you look at the rest of the teams that they got through, those teams played really well in the tournament as well. Like, it wasn't like they went through an easy part. They didn't play Chaminade or anything like that. They had to play some tough teams who all shown out and put on respectable efforts the rest of the way in the tournament. So I think that's got to be another part of positivity, to a positive aspect to take from this game. But the biggest thing for me beyond Johnny Davis just going out there and playing so well was Tyler Wall, man. Like, he played so good. You look at the evolution of his game from that scrawny kid as a freshman who was just kind of helping the team out, to last year overtaking Nate Reavers in the starting lineup. at the power forward position. And now, instead of being just an option that can help you out from time to time in the scoring column, he put up 18 points in that championship game and a really solid effort against Houston as well. But he is being efficient. He's playing within himself, and you don't see that, how he kind of goes out of control. He's playing very under control now, put up 18-5. And then added 4 blocks. Like, that is a really good effort. He is a phenomenal player on the defensive end, and you can see his confidence grow. I know that Greg Gard mentioned that Wall was a guy who we expected to take on a leadership role, and you can see that he did that. Even with Brad Davison, your elder statesman, shooting 1 of 10 in the game and really struggling, 1 of 7 from 3, not being able to get much going in the game, to have another player be able to step up and say, okay, I'm going to help you out here. Another guy, Lauren Bowman, he had a couple big buckets in the middle of the second half to really kind of swing momentum in their favor and allow them to run away with things. I am so incredibly impressed by this team and what they've been able to do so far and be able to have guys pick them up. It was a team effort, but really Johnny Davis and Tyler Wall deserve a ton of credit for just kind of carrying things and getting the team to the end, because they played so well and they give the team a 1-2 punch with a guy like Davison and Crowell who can also help you out from time to time that they haven't had. Like last year and the year prior, they had a very balanced attack. Now they've got a couple guys that you can turn to and say, those are players who are going to contend for all Big Ten honors. Wall probably on the defensive end and maybe as a second or third teamer. Johnny Davis, a guy who could be a bona fide first teamer in the Big Ten. I know it's going to be tough when you look at some of the talent around the conference, but he's going to be a first or second teamer most likely as well. And you got to feel really good about this team. There's still things to clean up. They're good. They still had stretches where they struggled to score, but the development of Davis and Wall to this point have really stood out, and it's a big reason why they went ahead and won the Maui Invitational.
Yeah, it's really been nice to see a guy like Tyler Wall kind of take that jump. You know, I kind of thought, you know, looking back at last year, that he was a guy, I don't want to say he didn't fit, but it was just kind of hard to find him to be really the guy that they played through. And now you're seeing an opportunity where you've got, you know, Jonathan Davis is probably the guy that you're going to play through, and Brad Davison is playing well. He's going to be a guy that you certainly are working the ball through. But Tyler Wall can be a guy that can really dominate a game. And he looks like a guy that has really taken his game to the next level, which is, it was awesome to see. He's played so much basketball in his career from Wisconsin at an early age to all of a sudden now being a guy that's not only a dominating force and really playing well on the offensive end, but defensively he played incredibly well. And you know, that game, you know, they don't even come close to winning it without a performance like that from him. So if he can play like that, and I'm not going to sit here and say I expect Jonathan Davis to play at that high of a caliber every game, but if they can get consistent performances of solid play from those two, this team all of a sudden becomes a much better team than I think the original outlook was. So it's been a great week to work back in the rankings to get some of these strong performances from some of these guys to win the tournament. I think the confidence has to be high, but rightfully so. I think that, like you mentioned, this team beat a lot of good teams, and it was a tough tournament. It was, I think, overall a really well-played tournament, and to see Wisconsin come out of top, I think, is huge for the momentum of this team, and now they just need to find a way to continue that and carry it on, because for better or for worse, their stretch of games coming up does not get any easier. They don't have a ton of, you know, cupcakes on the schedule, which I think you'll see, you know, iron sharpens iron. I think you're seeing already the playing these tough games in the non-conference will only help them as they get into the Big Ten Conference, and winning those games. And of course, winning the Maui Invitational is, huge for the psyche and the improvement and morale of this team. Because last year you talk about, you know, that team went out to New York and played in that tournament, really struggled. That was kind of a downer for them, and all of a sudden it kind of snowballed into a struggle. Here, hopefully it's the opposite, and they can come away with those 3 games out in Vegas and continue to play solid and collective basketball.
Yeah, and this team, while they're very young and they still have a long way to go, they've already kind of formed an identity, which I think is huge. They play really good defense. That's like what they're going to lean on. And then from there, they're able to make their free throws and they attack the basket, like, which I think helps them when you have a team that might go through some shooting woes. Wisconsin and shooting woes go hand in hand. At least if you go back the past, 10 years, there's been times when you see the huge scoring droughts and it drives you mad. But you look at this team and they're going to have scoring droughts, but their ability to attack the basket, because you have a guy like Tyler Wall, you've got a guy like Johnny Davis, who are best when they're going towards the basket and not settling for jumpers, and their ability to finish at the free throw line. In this game against St. Mary's, 16 of 18 from the free throw line, including 6 of 6 from Tyler Wall, 5 of 5 from Johnny Davis. And then on the defensive end, they forced 16 turnovers. So you're looking at a team that is able to do the little things. They're playing a really closely to a Bo Ryan style of basketball. They didn't get a bunch of fast break points, which they did early in the year, but their ability to weather those scoring droughts, I think, is going to be better because they have the ability to get after the basket and go to the basket instead of settling for jump shots, which we've seen so frequently these past few years based off of the personnel that they had.
Yeah, it's really been a fun few games for this team, and I'm excited to see what they can do as they move forward, and hopefully they can keep that momentum going and into this next stretch of non-conference play. All right, guys, so that wraps up our basketball talk. So why don't we get our ad reads out of the way, and then we'll get into what was a rough trip to Minneapolis for Wisconsin football.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business, Garrett Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from blue flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. So I think we were both hoping that we would be on this episode of talking about Wisconsin winning the West Division, winning the Axe, and heading to Indianapolis. And unfortunately, it is not quite that. It's kind of the complete opposite that we have to discuss. Really just a bad game for Wisconsin in all facets there. I can't really sit here and say there was something that we saw that was really positive in this game. And it's a different conversation for us than what we're used to having early in the season. We had some of these, rough, cathartic type of episodes. And then we kind of got into this team was rolling and kind of talking about the same thing. And now it's all of a sudden back to that cathartic. But this one almost stings even more, of course, when you lose your rival and lose everything that was on the line for this team. So a disappointing ending to the regular season. Overall, what do you kind of make and take from this contest?
It looked very similar to what we saw earlier on in the year. They weren't able to get Braylon Allen going. He was clearly hobbled, mm-hmm. right? Like you could see that he was dealing with an injury to that ankle, lower body injury. He went ahead and in post-game talked about how Minnesota did some things to make it tough on them and that they hadn't seen. And Wisconsin just didn't have anything to respond with. And that was frustrating in a lot of ways. But you look at the 7-game win streak, and Braylon Allen was kind of showing out and breaking tackles and making plays. And you saw Minnesota go ahead and say, he's not going to be the one to beat us. We're going to pack the box. We're going to stop him and dare Graham Mertz to beat him, and the Badgers couldn't. They just had no second pitch. They had nothing to counteract that with. Wisconsin, once again, went to throwing the ball a ton, 38 attempts. Graham Mertz hasn't won a game where he's had to throw that much before, and it's not the recipe for success. Defensively, there was some big plays, and Minnesota was able to do enough on offense. And it was just a bad game, and it was not fun to watch. I knew it was going to be bad when my dad, who's a diehard Badger fan, was just looking at his phone for the entire fourth quarter. He was just so pissed.
Yeah, I can't really blame him. It just felt like a game that, even from the jump, I mean, just the bad juju from the first play, Colin Wilder, and that targeting call, it just felt like it was going to be one of those days that that just didn't.
Did you agree with that call?
I didn't really agree with it. I could see why it got upheld. Like, I think you watch it and you say, okay, I think it's a dumb call and I think it's a dumb rule, but I can see that they're probably going to uphold this because that's what they've done all season. But I wouldn't sit here and say that I agreed with it, I guess.
I think that's fair.
It's you kind of saw it and you go, okay, that's not targeting to me, but he's probably going to get kicked out of this game. And that was an unfortunate start to what was kind of an unfortunate day overall. As you mentioned, the run game couldn't get going. The defense really, I know it was in the final score is probably not quite as indicative of the defense. I felt like Minnesota was picking up chunk plays and moving the ball really well, where it seemed like it probably could have been a wider margin if the defense didn't come up with some crucial and third and short stops to get off the field and key downs. But really it was just nothing great to take from this game. And, of course, a disappointing finish. So it felt like a game that Graham Mertz was going to have to try and win. And like you mentioned, when it's been put on his shoulders that much, it hasn't quite worked out. We can get into a whole host of things, but it's really the start to open up the conversation. It was a ton of negatives from this game, not a lot of positives to take. And offensively, we can maybe start there. And with Braylon Allen, of course, not being able to get going, the run game non-existent, really. You're going to probably be on the losing end when you just – with Wisconsin football, that's their identity. And when they don't have that, it turns to a passing game that hit some plays but overall wasn't consistent enough, wasn't good enough to get the job done. So offensively, what did you take from – was it more just inability to get the run game going? Was it play calling? What did you feel like was kind of the issue there aside from not being able to run the ball?
Everything. I think it all starts up front. You saw Minnesota say, beat us through the air. We're going to pack the box. And Minnesota's front, which they brought in a bunch of transfers, they whooped up on Wisconsin's offensive line. They crashed inside. They did not allow anything to get going. There was a couple phantom holding calls that I didn't agree with, especially early, a couple of them that really took away from some big chunk plays that I think might have shifted the game a little bit in Wisconsin's favor. But man, just the fact that they ran the ball 22 times, 2.8 yards a carry, Brady Shipper, the only one who averaged over 3 yards per carry on his one attempt, in just kind of a third down carry. But there was a lack of creativity when it wasn't working. I was surprised though that you didn't see a guy like Julius Davis get a carry, like not even a shot when you can't completely go away from the run. And I know that the Badgers were only averaging 2.8 yards a carry, but Minnesota was averaging 2 yards a carry. They ran it 37 times, and part of that is because they wanted to control the clock. They did a much better job on third down and in crucial situations to get chunk plays. But Wisconsin, like, you can't just completely abandon the run in there and just kind of show your cards that, hey, we're going to throw the ball at a shotgun every time. So I was surprised by that. If you have a hobbled running back, not being able to do that. But the offensive line just completely outworked. Wide receivers, just outside of Danny Davis, weren't able to do anything. Kendrick Pryor had a couple crucial drops, missed opportunities there. Graham Mertz was off pretty all day. And I know part of that was there was a couple times where there was a little bit of pressure, and he just hasn't been good when there's any semblance of pressure all year long. But, they didn't give up any sacks, but Mertz was also just – he short-armed a couple throws, didn't get it there, was off on his ball placement, which, I mean, it set up the defense in a terrible situation in the third quarter there based off of that interception. It was the same thing we've seen early on in the year. When you play a good team who is going to go ahead and say, we're going to stop the run and has the horses to do it, Wisconsin was able to do it. And I was impressed by what Minnesota did. And that makes me want to barf because you know, I just about swore there, but because I hate PJ Fleck and his stick and everything about him, but he put in a good game plan and completely, you know, worked over Wisconsin in this game. And that's frustrating to say, because I thought that Wisconsin would have had something to go to. We didn't see any of the things that we've seen in the past, where, whether it was, creativity using, jet sweep, creativity using some trick plays. I mean, nothing. There was nothing. There wasn't anything to kind of throw them out of what they thought was they were going to see. And because of that, Minnesota just kind of said, okay, we're going to keep stuffing the run and make you beat us. And Wisconsin couldn't. They didn't have the outside game to do it. They didn't have the quarterback to do it. And that's frustrating.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it. And I'm glad you mentioned the lack of creativity, because it's really odd that, you know, over the course of that winning streak, they implemented some wrinkles to get better in some of those facets. And then all of a sudden it just kind of felt like the offense as a whole want their, you know, and granted, when you're winning games with Braylon Allen running all over people, it's easy to get complacent and think that that's going to work every time. And this was the first time it hadn't really worked, and what how they were going to respond is certainly something of interest. But it just would have been nice to see some tries, some wrinkles. I mean, you've got your season on the line, so to speak. I mean, of course, Wisconsin's going to go to a mid-tier bowl, and they'll probably play well, and that's great. But you've got, you know, your division, oldest rivalry in college football, a huge trophy game, your bitter rival. But on top of that, the Big Ten West, the trip to Indianapolis for the Big Ten Championship, all of that on the line, and it just felt like overall the offense, when their key piece stopped working, they just kind of clammed up, and it's like they got a punch that, you know, they got a punch and they were just dazed and were never able to bounce back and find some sort of groove. It just seemed like the confidence was kind of taken out of them when Braylon Allen, you know, started to get shut down. And maybe that's just shows that this team was really good because of Braylon Allen's performances, and he was kind of carrying this offense. But when you've got other guys on this team, you know, Graham Mertz, you know, he's struggled, but he's played a good amount of football. The offensive line has played, you know, now a lot of football, and you've got receivers that have played a ton of football. So you should have been able to figure out some sort of way to put together a performance that was better than this. And I don't know if that's just, you know, the coaching staff and the play calling and struggles there, but it seems like it was just a collective, like, oh crap, our best weapon isn't working. We don't really know what to do. And that's frustrating, because like you mentioned, PJ Fleck put together a game plan, and that Minnesota staff deserves a lot of credit, because they found a way to neutralize him, to move the ball offensively, and it led to a victory for them and a tough finish for Wisconsin.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is Minnesota doesn't have, like, studs. It's not like they have Antoine Winfield from 2019. Like, they don't have guys, or Kamal Martin, where you're saying this is a future NFL guy, no doubt about it, he's going to be drafted. They don't have that. But what they did do is they were very sound, and they made their tackles. They did what they needed to do, and they had a game plan. They stuck with it, and it worked. I thought Danny Davis looked pretty good when he had chances, but I you look at this team right now, and it's just they can't get big plays. They had a long play of 17 yards. Like, that is just atrocious in college football. They put up 6 points of offense on 2 field goals. Like, this team has to figure it out on offense. There's going to have to be changes that are going to come there. But they need to be able to figure out something that doesn't require Braylon Allen breaking tackles. We talked about it last episode and in the episode before that. Like, a large chunk of his plays have come from broken tackles. I think it was out of the 220 yards against Nebraska, 184 of them came from broken tackles and yards after contact. That's great, and that tells you that you've got a really talented back. But when he can't break those tackles because he's hobbled, the defense is playing sound, and they've got a good defense, like, make no mistake about it. But Wisconsin just didn't have anything else that they could turn to, and that's tough to see, because they need to be able to have something else to help them out, whether that be another back, whether it be some creativity, whether it be the passing game. They've got to figure it out this offseason and before the bowl game. And because you look at that, I talked about 17 yards was their biggest play from scrimmage. You look at Minnesota, they had 6 different plays that went 18 yards or longer. 6 of them. in a game where there's where yardage and points are paramount, like it, because of limited possessions, to have big plays that, that get you first downs are crucial. Wisconsin couldn't get it. The offense was very, very bad. And 6 points isn't going to win you big games, not when everything on the line. You've got to score points. And, you know, the throw game was just bad all around.
Yeah. I mean, it just felt like in terms of the passing game, you know, it's like they didn't have big plays, but they kept trying to just kind of chuck it up in a lot of plays, especially late. I mean, part of that is you need to pick up some yards, but a lot of the plays that they had drawn up and the routes, that, you know, just was just putting it out there and just kind of hoping for a miracle. It never felt like a play that some of these passes that they were kind of drawing up and just kind of heaving up were going to connect. And I don't know if that's just lack of creativity in the route calling, or just guys not getting open, or a combination of both, or just Graham Mertz missing it. But the passing game overall just looked completely out of sync. And maybe that part of that is because they sold out for the run and said, hey, you know, make the passing game beat them, and they couldn't do it. I mean, kudos to Minnesota that they were able to hold up and shut that down, and then still be able to cover the pass. But really, it just never felt like even when, you know, Minnesota was daring Wisconsin to throw the football, they tried it. They just couldn't do it. They couldn't really hit anything going, and you saw that. I mean, the average yards per play was terrible. Just everything was just flat out bad. I know that's just kind of a cop-out way to say it, but that's really the assessment of it. You never really felt like Minnesota's defense was all that threatened, and it just was collectively – a bad performance, and I think that falls a little bit on everyone of that offense. And when you don't have that, you know, it's kind of like when in baseball, I think in your recap, you wrote up that you're not having that second pitch. It's kind of, I think that was a great metaphor what you put out there, is that when the fastball's working but you got nothing else, you know, the opposing team can just kind of tee off on that. And that's what it felt like for Wisconsin's offense, where they didn't have their main pitch, and the second pitch just wasn't working. And really, it just was – until it started to, you didn't feel confident that this team was going to make any sort of headroad into getting back into that football game. It was a close game, but really, it didn't feel like it really should have been with the way the offense was kind of going.
Yeah, like you said, 3.9 yards per play, 4.5 on their pass attempts. Minnesota, 12.4 on their pass attempts, right? Like, that's 4.5 yards per pass attempts is brutal. That's not all on Graham Mertz. Like, Graham Mertz had a bad game. He was not accurate with the football. There was miscommunication, but that doesn't all fall on him. There was opportunities. Kendrick Pryor had a couple of balls. One went right through his head on a deep ball, and he should have – Pryor should have been able to make sure that interception didn't happen at the very least. And sometimes your players, wide receivers, just need to be able to go and make a play that they weren't able to do, and that falls on the wide receiving group. But there's a lot to work through here. I just feel bad for a guy like Jake Ferguson in his draft stock. Like, just you look at what he had this year going into it, and the career he's had with the Badgers, and to see just their inability to really move the ball through the air this season because of the offensive line, because of the receiving threats, and because of Mertz, it makes it so that you have a guy who came back when he could have easily gone to the NFL, and it just didn't materialize for him. And hopefully he still gets drafted, because he's a tremendous player.
Yeah, absolutely is. And, certainly hope wish the best for him. And we'll see, you know, how this whole bowl game kind of shakes out for this offense. And they'll have some time to put together. Hopefully they can come out and be a little bit better. But overall, just a dud of a performance to end the season. And now you've got to sit with the sour taste in your mouth for probably a month or so when you talk about, you know, playing in a late December bowl game at least. So it's going to sit with you for a while, which is certainly disappointing. Defensively, like I mentioned, they played a good enough game to win this game. They didn't play their best game. I think the big thing that was the difference there was even going back to the Nebraska game, this team hasn't generated the pressure that it takes for Jim Leonard's defense to win. And when you don't generate that pressure, I think you saw that the secondary, I think a lot of the attention of the defensive struggles were looking at the secondary was playing poorly. But I think part of that, and these two kind of units work hand in hand, and specifically at Wisconsin, that makes a huge difference if you're not getting pressure because your secondary is left in coverage for longer amounts of time. So it's a cohesive unit, but overall this defense really didn't play well. It's been 2 weeks now where they haven't played up to what they wanted to be and where they were early in the season. So what did you make overall of the defensive performance from Saturday?
Yeah, similar to what happened on the offense, where the offensive line was overwhelmed. I thought the front seven, like you mentioned, wasn't able to get to the quarterback, wasn't able to do what they had been doing. They had three sacks, and part of that was because of individual efforts. I mean, you look at Keanu Benton, and he had a hell of a game. And I'm happy for him because he is a tremendous player. It hasn't really bared out in the stat sheet, but you look at his game, six tackles, two tackles for loss, you know, that were sacked, and that's really impressive. But Wisconsin, one quarterback hurry beyond the three sacks that they had. They had plenty of time to throw. They took advantage of play action quite nicely against Wisconsin. And Wisconsin's secondary wasn't good enough. And I think part of it, Colin Wilder would have been really nice to have there. Torchio struggled specifically in play action. He'd been a couple times with his eyes in the backfield. Same thing with Scott Nelson. He had a couple moments like that. Their tight ends, just like we saw Nebraska take advantage of Wisconsin's tight end with their tight ends. Minnesota did the same. And Wisconsin's just gotta be better. That secondary's was their kind of Achilles heel this year. They've made some plays on the ball in recent weeks, but a big part of that has been pressure. When teams are able to use a sturdy offensive line and give themselves time, they can take advantage of this Wisconsin secondary because Wisconsin's still working to get more speed in that group. And you know, beyond Leo Chanel playing hero ball and getting 14 tackles. And seeing a guy like Keanu Benton ripping stuff up inside, the rest of the defense really struggled. Herbig couldn't hold the edge. Jack Sanborn was having some trouble getting in there. I mean, you saw running backs stone Wisconsin's blitzers at times. Jack Sanborn got lit up one time by Minnesota's running back, which you just don't necessarily see. But overall, I mean, you look at this, it's another bad performance overall for a team. The defense, though, They gave up 23 points, which is, when you're looking at it, in the grand scheme of things, you'd hope for a lower number. But 23 points is still low. Like, you could still win that game if you have any pulse on offense. And Wisconsin didn't. When you look at it, the spread between the offense and the defense was just so huge that Minnesota, being a more consistent football team on both sides, just won out. And Wisconsin needs to be better. The Badgers defense spotted the offense 7 points. And the offense also put this defense in some bad situations. They got to be better. And Wisconsin's defense has been kind of exposed the past couple of weeks when they can't get pressure. They got to be better. And as a group, there's going to be a lot of reflection that needs to take place. And I trust that the coaching staff's going to do that and the players will do that. There's nobody more pissed off about the result than the team, but it doesn't take away from how frustrating it is for fans, for players, for coaches, for everybody involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you mentioned, that's a game that they certainly could win based on the defensive output. And you talk about, you know, the pick six by Scott Nelson was huge in that game. But I think collectively, overall, offense, defense, coaching staff, everybody could look in the mirror and say, hey, we needed to be better to win a game like that, because it's not like Minnesota came out. They had a good game plan, but I think if you were to make some adjustments and you felt like you had something else in there on both sides of the ball, I think you could have had success. It just didn't seem like they had that. It's hard to say that they seemed flat in a rivalry game, but it did kind of seem like that, which is probably not the case, but maybe they're just kind of caught off guard when things weren't working. But overall, just really disastrous trip, and everyone needs to do some self-reflection. And like I said earlier, it's going to be a sour taste in their mouth for quite some time, and it'll be interesting to see how this team bounces back and how they perform, in that bowl game, wherever it ends up being. It's going to be, Wisconsin historically has played really well in bowl games, but they haven't had to, deal with that loss and sit on that for a month. So I think it's going to be an interesting, something to watch for with this coaching staff is how they get these guys to respond. I mean, this bowl season, not to get too far ahead, but in college football, it's kind of changed where some guys aren't playing and sometimes they don't mean as much to certain players. I don't think that'll be the case with guys from Wisconsin, but certainly something to watch for. So hopefully they can finish on a high note, because right now this is probably one of the lowest notes that you could really draw.
Yeah, especially when you look at the hopes coming into the season, mm-hmm. and then the results to lose the Axe the way that they did, and really a poor performance in way in which they were dominated, in my eyes. Dominated might be a pretty strong word, but I look at it as I think Minnesota beat them in a lot of ways at their own game, and that's frustrating to see. You saw coaching errors like that. Flip it. Trotting out the punt team, oh my God, like I just about wanted to rip my own throat out during that when I saw that. And I know Paul Christ kind of jumped on the sword for Coach Herring, but we're going to talk more about what needs to change this offseason probably in our next episode, I would think. But that's inexcusable. Like yeah. You're down two scores. Trotting out the punt unit is in a short yardage situation when you need points is just stupid. Like there's no other way to put it. I know you were upset. I think everybody was upset. We saw punts inside the 35 again.
Oh, that was gross.
Yeah, like we saw field goals, like a 25 yarder, a 28 yarder. Like come on, Wisconsin needs to be better in all areas here. And even putting Larsh out there in a mm-hmm. crummy situation for a damn near 50-yard field goal, 48-yard field goal, when he's got a long of 48, it's cold out, you're on the road, like, what are we doing here? Like, it was one of those where you just say, okay, blow up this game because it was just terrible. And Wisconsin needs to be better. And it was like I said, I'm most frustrated in the fact that you saw Minnesota take it to the Badgers and now win the Axe 2 out of 4 years. That's not positive development for this team, and they got to make changes this offseason. When I don't want to get into it because we only got so much time, but we should definitely talk about it next episode.
Yeah, I think that will be a very much a main topic of conversation here as we have this now kind of a lull between games. I mean, I know we were both expecting to be talking and hoping to be talking about a Big Ten championship in our second episode of the week, but we'll certainly have to switch gears and talk about some changes because – they do need to come, and in order for this program to move forward to get to the spot they want to be, it needs to come, and we'll dive into everything that could possibly be in the works for the Badgers on a later episode for sure. All right, guys, that wraps up the latest episode of the podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed some positive basketball talk and some cathartic release in terms of the football talk. We'll be back with you later in the week, as always, on Wisconsin. Thank you.